Welcome to the Fantasy Unicorns Podcast, a fantasy basketball podcast with a dynasty focus.
Hello and welcome, all fantasy fiends, to the Fantasy Unicorns Basketball Podcast. We're very excited to have you here. I'm very excited to be here because I'm so excited that my voice is cracking. And the reason for that is because today, at the time of this recording, is opening day for the NBA basketball season. Ladies and gentlemen,
let's go.
Let's go. It's basketball season. No more talking about football. No more talking about FIBA.
Get out of here.
Looking at Twitter, scouring Reddit, looking for more information. We're going to have daily NBA content. By we, I mean the fans, not we, you listeners. Unfortunately, we will try to up it up. We'll try to up our game during the season. But still, you know, weekly, bi-weekly. But, joined as always by my good friend, my partner in crime, my PIC, my man, Jay. How are you doing? Happy basketball season.
Yes, happy basketball season. Tip-off day to you as well. I'm stoked for this season, obviously. It's starting in just a little while. Well, and it's in a little while for us. You know, by the time you're listening to this, opening tip-off has probably happened already. But you know, I'm pumped, man. My Pels are the opening game. We'll be without our big guy, you know, without Zion. But the Avengers will be without their Hulk. But we still got Cap. We still got, you know, Spidey, Black Panther.
Okay, play this out for me. Who's who? Play this out for me.
God, I haven't thought this out.
Drew's got to be Captain America, right?
Yes, Drew is Cap. You know, obviously Hulk is Zion. I'm thinking Lonzo is Spider-Man because he's just slinging.
Or Iron Man. Or Iron Man.
Or oh yeah, that makes sense.
You know, he's the flashy this, that, and the other. You know,
right.
Brandon Ingram has got to be like Black Widow.
Yes, I love it.
You know?
And then you know, we'll give Nikhil Alexander Walker Spider-Man because he's the young,
he's
up and comer, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it.
Derek Favors has got to be like, I don't know, like Ant-Man.
Right?
Like,
yeah,
he's kind of new to the group, but he's, you know, can do some cool stuff. I don't know how
that's
funny
good.
He is.
That's good.
Anyway, yeah, that's fun. That's fun.
Yeah. JJ Redick can be just somebody who just shoots guns.
Dude,
the Punisher. He can be the Punisher.
It's Hawkeye.
He's Hawkeye. Oh, of course he
is. Come
on,
man.
Oh, man. How did I not? And you know, Hawkeye's one of my favorite. Anyway, we got off track here. But
you blew it.
I blew it.
You blew it.
Anyway, so you know, it'll still be a good time. I'll be glad to watch meaningful basketball.
So speaking of the, I mean, we're gonna dive right into our news and notes.
Yeah.
Right here, because we've got a nice segue. I mean, how are you viewing, you know, obviously for those of you who don't know, although if you're listening to this podcast, I'd find that difficult to believe. Zion had surgery yesterday, Monday, to repair a torn meniscus in his right knee, expected to miss 6 to 8 weeks. You know, Jay, as the resident Pelicans fan, and probably the only Pelicans fan that you can find on podcasts, you know, what does this news mean for you? And then secondary to that, two other secondary questions. How does this injury impact Zion's Rookie of the Year bid? And by proxy, the Pelicans' playoff hopes. And then another thing that I want you to react to, will this opening night game between the Raptors and the Pelicans with no Zion be the worst rated opening night game in the history of the NBA? There are some thoughts for you.
I don't think it'll be the worst one because we still got some guys. You know, there's still Lonzo and Brandon Ingram, some of those. But because they're former Lakers, they might still draw some extra interest, I think.
Good point. Good point.
I still think Zion is a solid shoe-in for the Rookie of the Year. I don't think it's a 100% gimme. I think Ja Morant is he'll gun for it for sure. But yeah, this hurts. It hurts for me. It hurts for the people who, you know, may have reached for Zion and redraft leagues, and it hurts for the opening night tip-off. But, you know, so is life. Us Pelicans fans are used to our franchise player getting banged up. You know, we've developed our scar tissue and are hardened of it, so it sucks. But, you know, what you're going to do at this point? Most people have drafted already, so you have to roll with the punches. If you're one of those guys and you have to turn to the waiver wire now, Jeremy Grant is somehow owned in less than 50% of leagues, of Yahoo leagues.
Oh, no.
We're recording this.
Oh, no. And
provides a similar skill set. So, but, you know, other than him, Maxi Kleber and Davis Bertans also owned in less than 50%, but don't provide the same skill set. Same position, though. Mm-hmm. Although Bertans has lost a little bit of luster with Mo Wagner showing out. But we'll touch on that in a little while here. So
yeah,
that's
my
thoughts.
We'll get there. Don't jump the gun here, Jay. So that's interesting thoughts there. I think you're largely on the point there with Zion. The Rookie of the Year bit, I think it all comes down to how effectively do the other guys, you know, if the other rookies come out, if Ja Morant comes out, RJ Barrett, they come out, you know, with a fervor here in these first couple months, it's going to make this conversation much more difficult. But if they have growing pains in their respective, on their respective teams, then I think it might complicate things down the line. Sticking with the Pelicans here to a certain degree, Lonzo Ball averaging 77% from the free throw line in preseason, which is pretty good for him. 10 of 13. Is this, can he keep it up? I mean, is this a sign of things to come, or is this just Lonzo, you know, as we all know, the free throw game is a mental game. Is it just the less pressure in the preseason environment? Perhaps he's not in his head as much. How much is that playing a role perhaps in the inflated free throw numbers? Or is this a sign of perhaps a change in Lonzo Ball at the free throw line?
And you know, what's crazy is it was actually at 81.8% average before that final preseason game when he went 1 of 2 from the line, which
was
crazy. One thing I've taken notice of is how he seems a little more comfortable attacking the rim now. Like he's not afraid to be fouled anymore. I know it was just preseason, but you know, just going off the eye test so far. The thing with Lonzo's free throw percentage was that he may have averaged a terrible number, but he took so few of them that it wasn't quite as negative of an impact as other players may have been. Now he might actually have the go ahead to get in the paint and make a play now, whether that be to pass out or put up a shot and draw a foul. But yeah, I don't know if we can expect a huge leap in his free throw percentage average like this, but it was obviously a very small sample size. But I do believe in, you know, his improvement in that area. His stroke looks completely transformed. And one of the Pelicans assistants, Fred Vinson, is one of the better shooting coaches in the league. So I do expect a pretty sizable improvement from Lonzo in that area. I don't expect it to look like this, but maybe he can climb his way out of the dreadful must punt territory. And that's all we really want, I think, at this point, you know, to get around maybe 70%, which is basically the mark for it to not be as much of a concern anymore. And then if he gets there, maybe we can expect him to progressively improve it each season for a few years. I'm interested to watch and see how this new evolution affects his three-point percentage as well. He's been averaging in the low 30s in the preseason, but on very low volume. His average last year wasn't great, to be sure, but it also wasn't nearly as bad as you'd expect from a 41% free throw shooter. So I think it was actually about 33%. So about a third of his threes went in.
It's
just nice that he's not bringing his entire arm across his body when he shoots anymore. So maybe if he can achieve a slight uptick in 3-point percentage to go with his potentially improved free throw percentage, that would be huge. Last year, if you punted free throw percentage, he jumped from rank 103 to rank 79, and now with another year under his belt, we'll see what he does in his age 22 season.
Right. Well, I think with Lonzo, you know, it's going to come down to how effectively can he get that shot off. you know, in the run of play.
Right.
Once teams start getting, you know, maybe if he does start shooting better and teams start, you know, defending his shot a little bit more, how is that going to affect his ability to get a shot off quickly? You know, but anyway, let's not spend too much time here on news and notes. You know, it's Lonzo, we can maybe come back to it in our buy or sell segment a little later, but let's keep chugging along here. Next piece of news to look at, you know, big piece of news that came in earlier, well, at the end of last week, and that's Bradley Beal's extension that he signed with the Wizards, the max extension that he got, or near max. You know, he can't now. So an interesting element to consider here. A lot of people were considering if Bradley Beal would be on the move, you know, if he'd potentially be traded. But now that the extension's been signed, they have to wait 6 months before he can be traded, which puts him,
right,
you know, sort of right at, well, I guess beyond the trade deadline. So it won't be, if he gets traded, it won't really be able to happen until, you know, after this season. So, you know, how does this impact our view of Beal? I think maybe there were some people who might have said, you know, well, geez, I might reach for Beal because there's a chance that he'll get traded. And, you know, what does that do? Or potentially, you know, depending on your outlook, potentially you're saying I'm not reaching for Beal because if he does get traded to a great team with other assets, he won't be the same fantasy resource. You know, how does this sort of impact, how does the extension impact your view of Beal, and how is that, and does it change now relative to what your perspective was before the extension was signed?
Yeah, I was really kind of looking forward to Beal being moved this season, and that can't happen now. I just, I'm a little.
I think a lot of us were.
Right? Right, yeah.
A lot of us wanted to see what it would be, potentially, what he could be on, you know, a really good team, like maybe the Blazers, exactly, or the Nuggets, or the Jazz.
Yeah.
Maybe not the Jazz, but yeah.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I'm kind of confused as to, well, I was, before thinking about it, I was kind of confused as to why Beal signed this extension. But, you know, there's multiple possible points of reasoning behind it, I suppose. One of them being that he may have wanted to lock up another couple of years at this level of cash in case the salary cap drops a bit soon, which I've actually heard is a very real possibility. Or maybe he's just a loyal guy who wants to be a Dirk or a Dwayne Wade, even though Wade left the Heat for a brief cup of coffee in Cleveland. But I think most people will just kind of strike that off the record book. But anyway, I'm pretty nervous about Beal this year for fantasy purposes. But it's a touchy situation for me because I think he'll have a monster season when he's playing. Now, this may be a false concern or a bit confusing to some because the dude played all 82 games last year, if I remember correctly, and this year he has no help. He's gonna do the dang thing, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him put up late first round value. My concern arises down the stretch. Around the time of fantasy playoffs, when he could get shut down for the season, when the Wizards are, you know, the worst or second worst team in the East, whatever it may be, or he may at least just get put in some bubble wrap for a few games here and there around the fantasy playoffs just to preserve him. I have similar concerns for Joel Embiid, actually, but, you know, these teams will want to preserve their franchise pieces. Either way, Beal isn't playing as much as he did last year, in my opinion, because I think he also played the most minutes in the league last year, the most minutes of all players, I believe. Like, why? You know, Scott Brooks just trying to win games to save his job, maybe?
He did have one of the highest usage rates in recent years, actually surpassing some of John Wall's earlier marks for usage rate. It's definitely very, very likely that Bradley Beal, you know, gets leaned on again, although I don't know. Maybe things could change. Maybe the GM, you know, is sitting there saying, new GM now, saying, well, we can't really treat him that way. We've got him locked in for 4 years. Yep. We can't use him in the same way. He's not the same asset for us now. We need to preserve him long term. It's very possible that could change.
Yeah, and one more thing. I kind of had a thought before this that maybe Beal would want to stay on the court again this season in order to kind of chase that all NBA and get a Supermax next summer. But, you know, that's kind of off the table now for this year as well. You know, he locked up some money for another season or two. So maybe He won't care about those awards. You know, that won't come into play for this year. So I don't know. Either
but
way,
he's that kind of guy.
Right. I think he cares. That's true. Yeah. So,
you know, he is that type of guy.
I'm a little wary of Beal this year. I'm not saying I wouldn't draft him for sure. It would just have to kind of be at the right price. Because down the stretch,
the question is,
very nervous.
Is he going to produce at the same level that he did last year? And I think most signs point to no, because to me, it's like regression to the mean. He was so unbelievably good last year. Maybe he is. I suppose it's possible, but I just don't know how he can sustain that for a whole nother year. I mean, he was shooting with efficiency as the sole option, right?
Right.
As the only guy in Washington. Now most teams have had a whole summer to game plan for Washington. I just don't see how the same things that were working for him last year are going to be there for him this year. And unless he really changes versatility, or unless someone else on the Wizards really changes the way that they can approach the game on the floor, which I don't think that's going to be the case just due to the talent on that roster, I think it's going to be difficult for the Wizards to expect, or for anyone for that matter, to expect Bradley Beal to be at the same level for this season. So moving on to the next piece of news, several pieces of news, I suppose. A whole slew of contract extensions came across the board today on Tuesday and yesterday. We saw Jaylen Brown, we saw Buddy Hield, Domantas Sabonis, DeJounte Murray, all got their extensions, big ones. Buddy Hield in particular, with the strife with Vlade Divac, saying that he was insulted by the first contract negotiations they had, signaling the international signal for money signs, putting those fingers together. Show me the money. Let me feel the fabric, the quality of your fabric there, Mr. Vlade Divac. Show me the money. And he got his extension. I mean, he went out there and he got it. You know, I think a lot of people were saying, well, Buddy Hield, you might be overextending yourself a little bit here, guy. It's Buddy. You're not that good. But I think that the point that he made was he's been better than I think maybe the point that he might have made is you're going to pay Dwayne Dedman all this money. You're going to pay Harrison Barnes all this money, Trevor Ariza. You're going to pay these guys. Why won't you pay your young talent, right? Get that guy locked in on the books. Get that guy who is young. He's 26 years old. He fits well with Darren Fox. You know, and really the question is, you know, is he better than Bogdan Bogdanovic? And right now he is. And if the Kings are going to be pushing for the playoffs, you're going to need guys like Buddy Hield. Other people were kind of scoffing at the Jaylen Brown extension, saying it's too much money for a guy who really only gave you one great playoff run 2 years ago. Overall, the other two, Sabonis, DeJounte Murray, those were kind of seen as the right move. What was your take on these moves? Anyone that stands out to you as, you know, potentially too much or too little? How do you feel about it all?
I feel like Buddy Hield deserved to be paid a lot more than Harrison Barnes, but I believe they got basically the same thing. But that's just because Harrison Barnes was completely overpaid. Jaylen Brown, yeah, he got overpaid a little bit, but I think they're paying for age and perceived upside there. I'm actually surprised a lot of these deals got done, to be honest. I don't know if it had anything to do with the China situation and the salary cap potentially falling a bit next year. They wanted to get their money, yada, yada, yada. But I was not expecting Sabonis' deal to get done. I was not expecting Jaylen Brown's deal to get done for separate reasons. I felt like the Celtics wanted to wait, until next offseason just to see another year of Jaylen Brown and see what they had in him before they gave him all this money, especially with the depth that they have. And we'll go over that a little bit later. With the depth they have on the wing there now and in the guard rotation and all that. I don't know. It doesn't really change my view of them for fantasy purposes. The only thing I wanted to bring up is the Pacers were reportedly shopping Sabonis around when it didn't look like they'd come to an agreement. But now you know,
how
like with Beal.
How confusing was that?
I know. Yeah. Like, I don't think they can trade him this season, just like with Beal. So his value is kind of set in place. And the You're same right. goes for all these other guys as well, I guess. I'm actually pretty surprised some of these got done, like I said, though.
I think the point you made about China is very interesting, right? I think that might be more of what's going on here than we care to admit or realize at this current point. Obviously, from our vantage point where we sit, you know, there's no way for us to know for sure.
Right.
But I think that a lot of people were shaken to the core in the NBA world when sort of digging into the numbers a little bit, and this was reported widely, but the potential revenue loss for the NBA should a partnership with China fall through, it's significant. I mean, a lot of the reason why the NBA saw the cap hikes that it saw and the reason why the valuation was soaring as much as it was, a large part of that was due to recent developments in China. And a lot of that is about the NBA worldwide initiative that they've had going to foreign countries, China, India, South America generally, building these basketball programs and the revenue windfall that comes from that. I think a lot of smart people in the NBA began to realize that, you know, actually this, you know, this crazy train that we've been riding for the last few years in the NBA, it's not as sure of a thing as we might think. The cap isn't going to rise potentially year over year as much as we might think.
Right.
And maybe it was a bit of a wake-up call for these younger guys. You know, obviously when you're at that age, you're saying, let me get a 4-year contract, I'll get another big contract again, right? I mean, for Jaylen Brown, he's very young, I think 22, 23 years old. You know, he'll get that next contract at 26, 27. I mean, at that point, he could be getting a max extension. It's not a bad idea. He got a good deal from Boston, got a really good deal. I think he's getting 28 a year for 4 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's big. I've got him in a salary league and I'm screwed right now. I mean, I've got to find a way to get rid of him. I did not think he was going to make this type of an extension. I mean, I really did not. He's really, it's a very significant impact. And I was reading an article, John Collins, you know, those other guys, Lauri Markkanen, John Collins, Lonzo Ball, where their extensions, are they going to get their extensions, right? You know, those are some interesting questions. And you know, if John Collins comes out and he adds playmaking, he adds more of that 3-point shot, he plays better on defense, he's going to play himself into that type of an extension. And then you've got a bunch of guys in kind of that top class of the younger NBA that really impacts how much money there's going to be available on the market, especially in 2 years, you know, this summer, restricted free agency. Now those guys, I believe a few of these guys would have been available for restricted free agency. Now they're off the table. Buddy Hield is one of those guys. You know, it's very, I think these contract extensions, we're going to be looking back at the end of the year and we're going to be saying, man, that was really, really significant. And I'm especially looking at Jaylen Brown to see, does he play his way into earning that contract? You know, are we going to look back and say, man, you know, in 3 years, are we going to look back and say, geez, the Celtics were real dumb giving him that extension? You know, well, that remains to be seen. Any other points here on the extensions that you want to make?
No, not really. Just that, you know, you said it yourself. These were really the guys at the top of the list for next year's free agency. And I know they were going to be they were going to be restricted free agents. But, you know, now that they're gone, it's DeMar DeRozan and I don't know who else. There's not really much there. So, you know, the Knicks holding all
Chris
their money.
Middleton, really... Chris Middleton signed his extension, so he's not available anymore.
Yeah, yep.
Technically, Anthony Davis.
Technically, yeah. Which would be beautiful if he left the Lakers.
That would be crazy.
But Giannis is too, technically. But, you know, yeah, I don't expect
there are a few interesting, but it's really weak. And so this makes it even weaker. LeVert got his extension. I mean, for teams that were planning on maybe playing next year, I mean, I know to speak from personal experience, the Hawks, they have a lot of cap space next year. They've got a bunch of expiring contracts. They've got the Parsons expiring contract, Solomon Hill's expiring contract. crab his expiring contract. So they'll have a bunch of space next year. I'm curious to see what they do. They bring in more bad contracts for more picks because they'll say, well, geez, no one's available for us to throw a contract at this summer.
I think there's only four teams left now with $20 million or more in cap space next year. And like you said, the Hawks are one of them. I think the Knicks are going to be one of them, and I forget who the other two are. But yeah, there's going to be four teams, and they're all kind of young and up and coming teams. So we'll see what they do. They might all try to take that route where they just bring in they take on bad money for picks, which is smart, to be honest, in those kind of positions.
As a Hawks fan, that's what I hope they do.
Right. Sure.
Because that's – we're not – I'm thinking about over-unders. I'm going to lock in my win bets, my total. It's one thing I like to do. I like to bet on the lines for wins.
Yeah, I did that.
I'm taking the under on the Hawks.
I did as well.
I hate to say it as a Hawks fan.
It came down to the defense for me.
How did they get better? They didn't get any better. And as much as the team from a talent standpoint is better, which it is, right? I mean, I don't think anyone in terms of general talent, right? Maybe not actual potential, much better. Overall, the team got worse. So they're not going to be and the East as a whole got better. So I'm not interested I am more looking for the Hawks to be just horrible, and I want that. I would like that very much. So moving on to the final piece of news. I mean, we are taking our time with our news and notes, but hey, that's what the people want. We give the people what they want. Final point: Blake Griffin. Maybe expected, maybe unexpected. Blake Griffin, he's out for the beginning of the season. At least the first week, he's going to be reevaluated in early November. Personally speaking, I was really hoping that Blake Griffin would. I think we talked about him as a potential buy low candidate earlier on an earlier podcast. He's not missing significant time. It's not a Zion 2 month situation. Looks like he's only going to miss maybe the first week, potentially the first couple weeks. But you know, a lot of people. There's a lot of hand wringing, a lot of nervousness around how much is Blake Griffin going to play, and what does that mean for how good the Pistons? What they're up. Side might be this season. I mean, what do you take? What's your take on this injury? Or is it a sign of things to come in Detroit? Is it just, hey, you know, beginning of the season, let's be cautious? I mean, how do you feel about this? Because to me, it gives me the bubble guts. I don't feel so good about this. It makes me not feel so good.
Yeah, I normally tend to avoid guy, I hate calling players injury prone because it's such a touchy subject, and you never actually know with things like that. But luckily I don't own him anywhere. I feel like this is going to be, it could definitely be one of those seasons where he's in and out. The Pistons are going to try to push for a playoff spot. And so they're, you know, when he's healthy, he's going to be out there for sure. But I just wouldn't be comfortable with it. And Christian Wood, you know, a guy I'm not going to talk too much about him because we're actually going to bring him up in a little while. He gets a huge boost from this, at least while Blake's gone. He might even be worth a look in standard leagues. You know, I'd keep an eye on him. And if you have a strong feeling about him, you know, maybe jump on him before other people because he's got that fantasy. I said I wouldn't get into it. So, you know, we'll get into him in a little while.
He can't stop himself, ladies and gentlemen. He just wants to keep giving the hot takes. I get it. I mean, the Pistons there's so many problems, you know, so many problems there, so many things that I don't like. And yet, as funny as it might seem, I'm actually kind of heavily invested in the Pistons across a few leagues, which makes me feel really uncomfortable. Reggie Jackson was downgraded to day-to-day game time decision for their first opener. Looking at this roster, there's a lot of question marks. And if Blake Griffin's not going to be playing a lot of games, Markieff Morris, I mean, that's all they've got. And that's not great. Who knows? Maybe Sekou Doumbouya can get in there and get some minutes, although I highly doubt it at the beginning of the season. I would love to see him out there. But I think the Pistons are a lot of question marks. But who knows? Maybe Reggie Jackson steps up without Blake Griffin on the floor and takes over. Maybe Andre Drummond steps up a little bit more this year, though I think that we've kind of seen what Andre Drummond has to offer. It's kind of one of those things where it's like looking at a car crash with the Pistons. You know, you want to look away, but you can't. That's how I feel about it. I'm going to be watching a lot of Pistons basketball this season out of like a strange sense of curiosity. Like, I don't know if it's like masochism or whatever, but like, I'm just, it's like a train car. I can't look away from the Pistons. I'm just like weirdly curious about how they're going to be this season. I've always kind of been a Blake Griffin fan, just personally, just like, I like him, not for fantasy, but just like as a basketball fan. I want to see him succeed, 'cause I just feel like he's just been slapped around. Very curious to see how the Pistons do this season. And that will conclude our news and notes on this beautiful Tuesday episode. So next we're going to move in to some preseason buy or sell. We're going to be talking about a few of our what we like, what we don't like from the preseason so far. Stay with us. We'll be back shortly. Welcome back, fantasy fans, to the Fantasy Unicorns podcast. We're back here, preseason buy or sell. We're sitting here on day one, looking with the entire NBA season laid out before us. The game is going to start the opening game. Pelicans Raptors is set to tip off in the next 15 minutes here, IRL. For those of you listening, obviously this will be after that, but one thing we wanted to do here was maybe talk about a few of the players that are doing very well in the preseason, players that are struggling, and then, you know, discuss whether or not we believe, we buy or sell on if that narrative or if that storyline is actually going to remain, if this is something that we think is something to keep an eye on or you know, through the season as we kick off, or if this is something that we're selling that we don't believe is, you know, going to come to pass in the season or is going to matter. So diving off here, Jay, are you buying what Mo Bamba has been selling here in preseason? He's doing well. His last couple games here, less productive, but still more good than bad. He's averaged 17 and a half minutes, not a lot of minutes, as you might see from, you know, in the preseason. Just over 11 points a game, 4 rebounds, almost 2 blocks, which is great to see from him. 1.5 threes. I mean, that's great. That was that's a little bit of the intrigue and the allure that had me excited about him in the draft a couple years ago. 59% from the field, great efficiency per 36 numbers. He's got 22, almost 23 points, 7 rebounds, 3 blocks, almost 4 blocks, 3 threes. In those per 36 numbers, are we buying or selling here, Jay? What do you think about Mo Bamba, the sensational beginning here in preseason?
Yeah, this one makes me smile a bit because I love Mo Bamba. He's not one of my guys.
I've got him in our fantasy unicorns money dynasty league.
Yeah,
I've got him. I reached for him. I'm feeling good.
Yeah, he's fun to watch and has an outstanding fantasy skill set. The question with Bamba was always if he would be able to hold his own in the paint and stay on the court. You know, if he would get bullied too much and show inefficiencies. And that seemed to be the case in his rookie season. And, you know, that's why he wasn't granted a very big role. The thing is that the guy who kind of took his spot last year, Kim Birch, is still there, I believe. But signs seem to be pointing toward Bamba earning that backup center role this year behind Vooch. I don't expect him to be much of a standard league guy this year, but worth a look in deeper leagues for sure. I'm certainly rooting for him. I dream of a day when that pesky Aaron Gordon is out of the way and Vucevic too, so we get a Bamba Isaac front court. You know, just the length, the monstrous length of a duo.
Unfiltered
like that.
Unfiltered length. Unfiltered, unfettered length.
Yeah.
Sorry, that sounds weird. Length and strength, ladies and gentlemen. Length and strength.
That's right. So anyway, you know, I'd say in dynasty leagues, I'm buying. But in a redraft league, I'm leaning towards selling. I don't think this is his season yet.
I think it's sustained.
Right. Even with just, you know, back up expectations, you temper the expectations a little bit for this season. He has a monstrous fantasy upside. Absolutely.
Oh,
huge.
Sure. Yeah.
He'll take a little bit of time for sure. But I love him.
He's going to take a little bit of time. I think for him, it's really going to come down to, can he build this season, right? Can he show us, you know, we are a dynasty focused podcast. So I'm going to throw out the redraft because I do think you're right. I think that for redraft, I don't feel comfortable with Mo Bamba in redraft. Vucevic is too good. He's still too good. And the Magic for one more year are going to be gunning for a playoff spot. They're going to be relying on Vucevic. But from a dynasty perspective, I'm buying because why? Because here's what makes me feel good. 1.5 threes. I mean, I don't care if that's preseason or regular. It doesn't matter for Mo Bamba because if he can hit the shot, he can hit the shot. So it doesn't matter. I don't care if it's preseason. For 3-point shooting for a guy like Bamba, it's not about space. It's not about, oh, are they giving him the shot? If he can hit it, he's going to get it. And if he can hit it, then that means it's there. So I don't know if that makes any sense, but there you go. What I'm looking for as a dynasty Bamba owner, what I'm looking for is, can he build on those things? Can he build on blocks? Can he build on threes? Can he build on good efficiency? That's what I want to see. Now, would I like to see more in the rebounding numbers? Yes. Would I like to see more steals? 100%. But I think that it's just so compelling because of his measurables, because of the potential there. He's dripping with potential. I really feel like from a dynasty perspective, I'm buying here on his ability to build on some of these building blocks that we've seen here. So moving into a struggling player, Derek Favors. Derek Favors, Pelicans boy, GT, Georgia Tech boy, someone who I mean, Georgia Tech, it's for me. As far as basketball is concerned, Georgia Tech is who I support in college sports. I keep an eye on our Yellow Jackets. Derek Favors, he's always repping Atlanta. Big fan. Struggled a little bit in the preseason thus far. Only given 14 minutes a game. 3 points, 4 rebounds, no assists basically to talk about. Half a steal, a block, 40% from the field, which is really low. Not so good here from D-Fave. I don't know. I'm not buying this. I'm selling it because I just think that the Pelicans were really playing it safe in preseason. I think they know that Derek Favors has had his fair share of injury issues. He's only playing 14 minutes a game. He's going to play way more than 14 minutes a game during the regular season. I'm thinking they're just being cautious with him. As a Pelicans fan, someone who's paying attention, Jay, what do you think?
Yeah. So I've always been wary of players moving to a new team that runs a very different system. And I don't know if there are two systems in the league that are more different than Alvin Gentry's and Quinn Snyder's. So I'm actually going to give Favors a pass here. You know, he's still trying to get right from a minor injury, and he's learning this completely new system and learning to play at a much faster pace. So there's going to be a learning curve here, and there might be some bumps in the road, especially early on, but I'm not too worried about it. Favors is the guy here, and the last time Favors was the guy and played more than 28 minutes per game, he was the 29th overall fantasy player. Now, I think it would be much too optimistic to expect anything like that this season, but a finish anywhere between 40 and 70 wouldn't surprise me. And the loss of Zion for the first 3+ weeks, or I guess 6 to 8 weeks now of the season, only strengthens his value a bit because they were already testing Zion at the 5 some throughout the preseason. So, you know, Favors will give you your traditional big man stats, and I think he'll be a reliable option for them.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there. I mean, I think Favors is going to be the main guy in the post for them. even Zion, when he's on the court, you know, he does operate. He likes to operate with his face up game. No, is he a shooter? No. But he likes to attack facing the rim, whereas Favors is a little more effective back to the basket. So I'm thinking that even when Zion comes back, they're going to be able to coexist. But I just wonder with Favors, you know, I'm really looking forward to Jrue Holiday and Derek Favors together. I think that they're really going to have great chemistry. So it's possible that we'll see some, like you said, the system. It's possible that we'll see some growing pains from Derek Favors in the beginning of the season, but I fully expect by mid-season, by you know, November, well, December, January, when the season really starts clicking and we start getting into the dog days of winter, that's when we're really going to see the chemistry pop between them. And that's what I'm looking forward to and what I'm hopeful for. So I'm not going to overreact here to a preseason performance from Derek Favors. Moving on to a player who's doing well for the Wizards. So grain of salt. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you that I'm selling on this right off the bat. Mo Wagner. Der Deutschland. Mo Wagner. I took German. I speak a little German. I took it in college. Oh, so, cool. You know, I'm ich kann ein bisschen Deutsch. But Mo Wagner. Well, there you go. Mo Wagner, good game. Good preseason. Good couple of games. Three games here that he's played. 21 minutes a game. 15 points. I mean, pouring it in. 3 rebounds. 2 assists, which is exciting for a big man. 1.5 steals, also exciting. 1.5 threes, also exciting. 56% from the field, almost 90% from the free throw line. Great per 36 numbers, as you can imagine. I'm selling on this, and there's a couple of reasons why I'm selling. First, it's the Wizards, and I'm not convinced that they're showing us what the season's going to look like for them in preseason here. Now, Moritz Wagner is not going to get 21 minutes again. I don't think. I just don't. I mean, I guess it's possible, but I'm not convinced that he's going to get those minutes night in and night out. I just think that the Wizards, because of the uncertainty on that roster and because of the youth on that roster, I'm just not convinced that he's really going to make an impact. Now I'm you know, Jan Mahinmi is out. He hasn't really played much, so there's minutes there. But I'm more worried about Davis Bertans getting more minutes. You know, 4 or 5. I don't know. I'm just not sure if this is sustainable for him. And as a result of that, I'm just not confident in his ability. And Mo Wagner here, he's a pretty big bet in any league. He's going to be end of the bench in any league that you get him in. So, you know, am I willing to see what it's worth? Maybe, but I'm not confident that I'm going to see these numbers in the regular season. And for those reasons, my friend Jay, I'm selling.
Yeah. So when it comes to Wagner, he's very interesting to me. He's been real this preseason. You know, he's really been showing out, getting some buckets. He could and should get those backup center minutes over Mahinmi. I mean, I know Mahinmi is probably a little more sound.
It's about the Wizards. It's about how they build their roster. Right.
Exactly.
Right? Like, who's really – they're going to go small. They're going to want Rui Hachimura at the 4. And they're going to put – Bertans is going to get those backup minutes at the 5.
Yep.
You know, true. And Thomas Bryan is young. He's going to play a lot of minutes this season. I don't know. But anyway, continue.
Well, and something else that's pretty noteworthy is that he played a little bit of power forward next to Thomas Bryan. So with minutes as the backup 5 and potential handful of minutes at the 4 – I say he could have some standard league relevance this year. You know, to me, it all depends on how well he can do on the glass and with his defensive stats. I don't know how many blocks or steals we can expect from him, although he's in the paint. They're bound to come if he is. So he'll get you threes, he'll get some points, and I think he'll provide a nice free throw percentage. And obviously, he'll probably be a positive in the turnover category too, if you pay attention to that. So that's four categories. If he can do better on the boards, he could really be a nice value. Unfortunately, he could knock one of my sleepers, Davis Bertans, down a little bit, but Washington needs something to watch. you know, they need something to look forward to, and they could have something in Mo Wagner here. Plus, if he pans out nicely, that's another promising youngster that the Wizards stole right from under the Lakers. So, I think I'm buying with the tempered expectations, because
interesting.
I expect there to be some struggles as he hopefully works his way into a bigger role this season. I'm not buying as in, like, I'm super confident in this, and, you know, he's definitely a guy you should be owning. But I'm buying as far as deeper dynasty leagues, definitely. I expect him to produce, I guess.
Nice. No, I mean, you've talked about him before. You like this guy, and I get it. He definitely has some tantalizing elements to his game. I really, really wonder about opportunity and long-term opportunity, because who are the Wizards going to target in a draft, right? They're probably going to go for a point guard and then big men, because their depth after Thomas Bryant is yeesh, right? So I just wonder, are they willing, is he in their long-term plans? I don't think so. I don't even know what the Wizards' long-term plans are.
I don't think they know either.
They don't know, right? And maybe he plays himself into that conversation, but just right now, it doesn't seem likely to me. So moving into players struggling again, we're going to ping back and forth here, as I've done so far. We got a player who I think was rated a little too highly in the season coming in, just because of situation, just because of fit, just because of opportunity as a starter. But I'm just not convinced he's a very good basketball player. I'm talking about DeLon Wright. Jay, 19.7 minutes a game in preseason, 4.6 points, 3 rebounds, only 2.5 assists, 0.4 steals, 0.4 steals, 0.2 blocks, not even a 3 a game, 38% from the field, 75% from 3. Pretty bad all around. I mean, what do you think? Buying or selling on DeLon Wright? Not good.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty for DeLon in the preseason. And the thing is, listen, I love Rick Carlisle, and I still consider him to be a top five coach in this league, but that doesn't always translate to good fantasy numbers. And that seemed to be the case with the Mavs at times in the past. And I know DeLon is the starter and all that, but there are several other names in this backcourt that will want playing time. You know, you got Seth Curry, who fits well with Luka offensively. Then there's Jalen Brunson, who's coming into his second season and is just a very sound and safe player, even as just a sophomore in the league. Then you got Tim Hardaway, who could be playing the two or the three when he gets in. Hopefully Luka plays mostly small forward, because you also got Rick Carlisle favorite Jose Juan Barea still rocking and rolling at the age of 36 or whatever he is now. So I don't know how much playing time we can expect each of these guys to get. I initially expected Wright to be heavily involved in that backcourt, with Seth and Brunson getting a little bit of run, and then Barea and Hardaway with very small roles. But Barea played a lot more than expected, at least in the preseason. And I wouldn't be shocked now if it's all a little more than I originally thought. You know, maybe Wright plays a couple of minutes less than I thought per game, like 27 instead of 30, something like that, which doesn't sound like a ton, but that's pretty significant for fantasy purposes. He might be falling just a bit in my projected rankings, but he's still the player worth owning the most in this backcourt, but he might not be quite as safe as he initially seemed, I guess.
Yeah, I am buying the bad DeLon Wright.
Yeah.
Let me just say, by the way, that I am watching NBA basketball.
Yes. Yes. It is on my TV as well.
We are blessed, ladies and gentlemen. We are blessed. Praise be. Anyway, so listen, I'm buying DeLon Wright being bad, which sounds weird. But yeah, I mean, I just fundamentally don't think that he's good enough to assert himself in this lineup. There are too many players who are better than he is at the things that he does well, which is just like being a floor general. Like Luka Doncic is better at that than he is. You mentioned JJ Barea. He's better. Seth Curry is a better shooter. Like, these guys, they're guys on the floor who do everything that DeLon Wright does better than he does. And the only reason why DeLon Wright is even there is just to be off ball next to Luka. I never really understood why people were so high on him. I guess it's one of those situations where people are basically saying he'll have the opportunity. And that's, you know, I don't care. If he's not good, he's not good. And I'm not going to go, I'm not going to reach or go over the top to get this guy, because he's just frankly not a good basketball player, in my opinion. I mean, relative to the other players, you know, that he'll be competing against. So that's my take on DeLon Wright. Let's move on, because this is boring. Jake Layman, doing well. Another
speaking of boring.
Yeah, speaking of boring. We're going to, you know, Jake Layman, Minnesota, 20 points a game, 20 minutes per game. 20 points per game would be something. 20 minutes per game. 10 points, 3 rebounds, almost 2 assists, nearly a block, 1.5 threes. Pretty good from the field, 46%. Pretty good. Jake Layman, I don't know. I don't know. I'm expecting you to give me. I really don't know. I really, really don't know. mainly because I have no idea about what the Minnesota Timberwolves rotation is going to look like. I think they're going to be pretty bad, and I just don't know. I think they'd rather give minutes to Kata Bates-Diop than Jake Layman, just considering where they are as an organization. But, you know, I mean, who knows? What's your take on Layman?
Yeah, I think I'm buying this. Just maybe not quite to the extent of what he did in preseason. Layman's a good player, and he should have a solid role on this team. He actually has 1-1 upside. He averaged 1-1 in his senior year at Maryland with good percentages, too. You know, last year was the first year he was actually given a somewhat sizable role at 18 minutes per game, because he was a blazer, and that's what Portland does with their young guys, as we've talked about multiple times on here. And I expect him to be used even more this year in Minnesota. I'd say at least 25-ish minutes per game, which might not be enough for standard league value, but in deep leagues, I'm interested. Yeah, a guy who looks like he could be starting and can give me 3 steals, even some blocks, points, and solid percentages. Yeah, I'm interested. So yeah, I'm buying, but slightly buying.
I think fundamentally it's the same situation as Mo Wagner.
Yeah,
sure. For me, and you're going to hear me say that again later. I might be saying that about everybody that we have for doing well, because it's just these guys. I think in preseason, you know, you're giving minutes to guys that you don't necessarily care about, you know? I know that sounds weird, but I just don't know if I very much care about Jake Layman, right? Because it's the preseason and he's going to get, you know, in preseason, they're going to give minutes to people, but are they going to give minutes to that guy in the regular season? I'm not sure. I don't think Jake Layman, I mean, listen, he does a few things that the other guys on, at least the other backup guys in Minnesota, don't do, right? He can shoot, he can steal, he's, you know, he can do a few of the things that, well, Robert Covington can do all those things, but Gorgui Dieng cannot. Noah Vonleh cannot. Naz Reid cannot right now. Bates Diop can do a few of those things, but he's still so raw. Jake Layman is a known thing. He's a vet at this point. He's older than some of the other guys on that roster down the depth chart. I think it's going to be a dogfight, and I just don't want any part of that Minnesota rotation, because it's going to be so precarious between those guys. I'm just not confident. I'm not confident that he's going to be able to break out. And I think they're just, you know, Jake Layman, he can slide from 3 to 4 to 5, but I don't know. Maybe. I'm sitting right in the middle there. I'm not willing to say for sure that I'm a sell. I'm definitely not comfortable enough to say that I'm a buy. I'm just going to sit right in the middle, right in that sweet spot. That's where I'm going to hang out. Next person to talk about struggling, not having a great preseason, although I think we all could have predicted this. Kevin Love just didn't look great out there, which, again, to be expected, hasn't played in a long time. Only 13 minutes a game, so it's not like we had a lot to go on. 6 points, 4 rebounds. Again, 13 minutes a game. I'm going to say that again, 13 minutes. Not an assist, just less than one assist. No blocks to talk about. Didn't hit many threes. Low field goal percentage. He had his free throws, but I bet it was like 2 free throws. 100%. I'm sure it was only 2 or 3. I don't know. Buy or sell, Kevin Love. Really bad preseason. What do you think?
Yeah. Didn't really pass the eye test for me. But, you know, for a player who's finished in the top 10 multiple times several years ago, he's had a rough go at it as of the last few years. 3 years ago, he played just 60 games. 2 years ago, he did just about the same thing when he played 59 games. And then last year, he appeared in only 22 games. It has not been fun for Kevin Love owners. So I'll be avoiding him once again. He could come out and have a monster year under Coach Boylan, who I like, but I'll take my chances somewhere else. I'm going to sell the notion that Love will struggle this season because I think he's a great player for Boylan's system, and he's obviously a very good basketball player. He'll be great on a per-game basis, but I just wouldn't feel comfortable with Kevin Love's stock on my fantasy team unless I got him for an absolute steal in the draft to where it wouldn't really matter so much if he missed, you know, a quarter of the season or something like that. But, you know, I'm selling the notion that he's going to struggle a whole lot. I think he's going to perform well when he's out there. But I don't want to own him.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, it's kind of one of those situations where it's you're just uncomfortable, right?
Yeah.
You're just uncomfortable with, you know, I think in the past we were comfortable with Kevin Love, right? Since his Timberwolves days, you know, he's given you 23 and 10, 20 and 10 every night with threes, with, you know, the odd assist, not many blocks, but with efficiency. I love that as a fantasy asset at power forward and center. I don't know if he's going to give you that this season until at least the middle of the season. It's going to take him a while to get back into the swing of things. And not only that, but it's going to take him a while to get familiar with what is essentially a team that he doesn't know anymore. He's actually never played with these guys before. Not only is he coming back from injury, but it might as well be a totally different team. So I just don't see how he's going to come in and contribute. It's going to take time. Now, if you're able to get him for cheap and you have good enough players, you know, you're a contending team and you have good enough players to back up having him suck for a little bit in the beginning of the season on the hopes that he'll, you know, straighten out or get traded or something and increase his value. That is, to me, a very interesting strategy, much more interesting than, you know, expecting him to come out and contribute. He's an interesting buy low target for late season performance, in my opinion. Moving on to another boring white guy who's doing well.
There's a lot of those preseason on this list, isn't there?
A lot. Preseason, I guess, is like the time to give your boring white guys who can shoot the chance. Give them the shot, you know. And another, you know, boring white guy who's taking advantage, Frank Kaminsky, who I hate, by the way. I do not like him because I'll tell you why, and this is totally irrational.
Because you're jealous of his dance moves, huh?
No.
He's got those moves.
Definitely. Man. That's what it is. 100% that's what's going on. I remember there was, and this is stupid, but I just remember watching the draft. I think it was the 2015 draft, 2016 draft. When he was drafted, I think he's been in the league for 3-4 years. although it feels like longer than that. God, I feel like Frank Kaminsky's 10 years. 2015. Yep. It's the same draft as Kevin Porzingis. Who's Kevin Porzingis? Christy Porzingi. I remember watching that draft with someone, and someone was saying when Porzingis got drafted fourth or whatever, fifth by the Knicks, sixth, I don't remember exactly what it was. I had a guy that I was watching the draft with who said, "Oh, that sucks. Porzingis is gonna suck. Frank Kaminsky's better than Kristaps Porzingis." And I was like, "You have got to be kidding me. Frank Kaminsky, the dude who looks like a Badger from the Wisconsin Badgers. No shot in hell this guy's better than Kristaps Porzingis." And ever since then, I've just had an irrational hate for Kaminsky, because I think there were a lot of people who thought that he was a good basketball player, and
there were a lot of people who were like,
"He's a top 10 pick," and I was like, "No, he's not." No, and the Hornets did it right. They picked him like 12th or something.
It was earlier than that. It was eighth, I think.
Eighth or ninth in the Hornets. God, they suck at picking. They suck at picking. I mean, again, this season is, you know, I mean, not that PJ Washington. Anyway, my point is, Frank Kaminsky is the point that I'm making is that he's fool's gold. He is fool's gold because he can do certain things that you think, oh man, well, here he is, because he's got a nice little stroke. In preseason, he's hit 2 threes a game. He shot 85% from the free throw line. He's getting 5 rebounds a game. This is what excites you about Frank Kaminsky, but it's not sustainable, people. Don't believe it. Don't believe it. He's fool's gold. He looks like a leprechaun. He is a leprechaun. Fool's gold character. All right. And you just don't want it, because first off, Phoenix is a shit show. And I've been cursing a lot on this show because, you know what? It's our podcast. All right. And this is who I am. And I'm not going to change myself. You want me raw and unfiltered, listeners. The Suns, it's a shit show. I don't believe in that rotation. I think Dario Saric is way better, like leaps and bounds better than Frank Kaminsky. I think that Frank Kaminsky is just not a player who can contribute on a team who wants to be good. And the Suns, whether or not they're going to be good is irrelevant. They want to be good. They're going to give more minutes to Aaron Baines. They're going to give more minutes to Kelly Oubre. I think they're going to give more minutes to Cameron Johnson, frankly, considering where they drafted him, huge reach. I just don't see how Frank Kaminsky is going to be relevant. And I just don't think he's a good basketball player. And I think that the Suns want to be good, I guess, because they've made that really weird trade to get Dario Saric. They want to be good. And Frank Kaminsky just is not a basketball player who should be on the floor if you want to play good basketball, period. And so I just don't, I'm totally selling on this. Big sell.
Yeah. Real quick, speaking of Kristaps Porzingis, have you ever heard the Porzingis rap song?
No.
It's a Latvian rap song.
Is he Lithuanian? Which is it?
I don't forget which one it is, but anyway, you have to check it out. You have to listen to it with bass. It's something to behold.
It's all about that bass for you, isn't it, Jay?
It is. Anyway,
it's all about that bass.
So getting back to Kaminsky here, I guess this was the potential and the hope Kaminsky showed Charlotte when they drafted him in the top 10 in 2015, like you were saying. But I'm selling this. I'm with you. I'm selling it. I'm not buying the whole he just needed a fresh start with a different franchise selling point. We've had a good 4 years of Frank now, and while I know development isn't linear and it takes some players longer than others to find their footing in the league, this ain't it for me.
Wasn't he a four-year guy or a three-year guy at Wisconsin?
Yeah, he was. Maybe if this were the Spurs or something, it'd be a little easier to digest. With that being said, I wouldn't be totally shocked if Kaminsky came out and performed better than he did as a Hornet, if given the chance, but he's not a guy I'm really interested in for fantasy purposes. You know, you got Ayton there, you got Sarge, who the Suns like. They also brought in Aaron Baines for some veteran competence in the front court. And then it's likely that we'll also get some small ball situations with Kelly Oubre or Cam Johnson running the four at times. So, you know, good points that you were bringing up there. I don't see a situation where Kaminsky gets much run at either front court spot. You know, not enough to put him on the radar outside of like the deepest of 30 team leagues, maybe. So yeah, I'm with you. I'm selling this one for sure.
You heard it here, folks. Frank Kaminsky, he sucks.
at basketball, sorry. not
are we mean? No, he's. I'm sure he's a fine dude. I'm sure he loves cheddar cheese. I don't know. Wisconsin. I don't know. Yeah. Look at his face. Anybody who's listening right now, pull up a picture of Frank Kaminsky. Look at his face. And you tell me if you don't think that he's put down a wheel of cheddar cheese before in his life. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. At a frat party, you know. Is it there? after a game.
Just putting down wheels of cheese. Like they do in Wisconsin. That's a pastime, isn't it? Up there? I'm sure.
It's gotta be,
right? He's not good. Okay, so next, someone struggling a little bit. We've talked about him a little bit earlier. Struggling touch. But he's a young guy. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Did well scoring 18 points a game. I mean, very well. He played 26 minutes a game. That's something that I don't know if he's going to get during the regular season. But 26 minutes a game, 18 points a game.
Oh, I think he'll get at least that. I think he'll get more than that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Even with CP3?
Yeah, I think he'll be either the starting two or the primary backup three. But he's their guy. I mean, he's got to get.
He's going to get the minutes.
Yeah, I think so. Around 30, okay. Something like that.
Okay. Well, the thing that worries us here is 1.2 assists.
Yeah.
So what the question here is, are you buying or selling on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's lack of playmaking ability that he's shown in the preseason? We were hoping, I think, you know, people paying attention were hoping that this would be an opportunity for him to showcase a little bit more of his playmaking and ball handling ability. We know that he's an elite defender. We know that he's a capable scorer, versatile scorer. But this playmaking question was sort of the missing piece, I think, that a lot of us were hoping to see. What does it say to you that he hasn't really showcased that on a bit of a, you know, I mean, it's the pressure is not really there in preseason. You can test some things out. I mean, how are you viewing his performance thus far?
Yeah, so the thing with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is, like you alluded to, he just hasn't shown a leap in his playmaking development yet. And in college, he did fine with it. He wasn't anything fancy, but he got the job done and averaged around 5 assists per game in pretty big minutes. Now, I know development isn't linear and all that jazz, like I said, with Kaminsky, but for a guy who's gonna have the ball in his hands a ton, he's going to need to be able to find open guys, especially once Chris Paul is gone. Maybe CP3 will rub off on him a little bit. I think that might be part of the goal here for OKC and why they seem to be keen on holding on to Chris Paul, at least for now. But anyway, SGA will be fine. The assists will come, I think. It might not ever be at an elite level, but a handful per game will be there. And on top of that, he'll be good for several other stats, like obviously points, steals, some out-of-position blocks, and he'll even help you in percentages a little bit. And he's a solid bet to be a breakout candidate. I'm all about these Swiss Army knife, jack-of-all-trade type players, and I like SGA a lot, but it just depends on the league. I know several guys who are super high on him to the point they're taking him late round 3, early round 4, and it's just one of those leagues. In those type of leagues, I'll 100% be going without SGA. Otherwise, I'd consider him just a little later than that as, you know, a potential top 50 guy. And before I pass the ball back to you, I just want to say right now that Nikhil Alexander-Walker is actually on the court with the bench unit. He is playing.
No.
And it looks like he.
No.
I see what you did there. I guess it's appropriate because we were just talking about his cousin. But anyway, I guess he took Frank Jackson's potential spot here.
We'll see. We'll see what he does. I mean, what I'm seeing here is the Raptors are back. I mean, they were losing pretty bad.
They were. The Pelicans scored 13 points in 3 minutes to start.
Toronto came storming back in the same quarter. Right now. I mean, it's interesting stuff there. You're seeing the experience of Toronto over the youth of New Orleans. It's an interesting little interesting cat and mouse game going on here. To the Shai Gilgeous point, I think I think from a playmaking standpoint, specifically about the playmaking question, I think we're not going to see it this year or next. I mean, I don't think we're ever going to see Shai Gilgeous-Alexander putting up 8 assists a game, right? Or even maybe 6 assists a game. I could see him maybe getting 5 consistently. Now, a big part of that is that Chris Paul is one of the best assist men in the game. So there's a pro and a con to that. First off, in terms of percentage, he's just not going to have the ball in his hands as much, Shai Gilgeous. So just by function of that, he's not going to have as many assist opportunities. Now, the good side, the positive side to that, is he's going to be learning from the best. So he's going to be learning from Chris Paul how to play the game. And that is a huge, that's a very important element to how good he might be, is he's learning from the best. Dennis Schroeder is also a really, he's a great passer, gets a lot of assists. I just don't know if Shai Gilgeous is going to have the opportunity to be the assist guy. Now, everything else on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I'm buying. I'm buying the whole thing. I'm buying that he's not going to be a huge assist guy, but I'm buying his talent as well. So there's definitely some question marks, but I think that ultimately, he's not going to be a guy who's going to get you a lot of assists again, but everything else that he does is high value. So I still think that he's a high value fantasy asset. And great for a punt assist build if you're looking for a point guard. Those guys, as we talked about, position scarcity.
He's positive.
Those guys are, someone who you can get, who in a punt assist build, who can get you point guard minutes, that's big and valuable. So something to consider there for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Looks like we have one left.
Yeah, the last person to talk about, Christian Wood. He's someone who, has been on a couple people's radar. We talked about him.
I'm sorry. No, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's fine. It's someone who we talked about a little bit earlier. Someone who we think, potentially could get the opportunity. Why don't I just let you take this one off the top? Since you touched on him a little bit earlier, are you buying or selling his good performance thus far? I mean, just to give the listeners a little bit here, 13 points a game, 7 rebounds, almost a block, 55% field goal, 83% from the free throw line, which is great. Are you buying or selling Christian Wood's good performance here in preseason?
Yeah, I mean, he's a good story. What a story Christian Wood is. I don't think the talent has ever been his issue. His maturity and ability to actually earn playing time because of it was the thing. Because boy, he can put up some fantasy numbers. I'm buying him here, but it's another situation of tempered expectations. He won't blow up very often, except maybe the days that he has some injuries in front of him, which would be something to watch for, considering Blake Griffin is ahead of him in the depth chart. And now, like we mentioned earlier, Blake is out to start the season. So I expect Christian Wood to do well in the beginning, hopefully. He could even crack standard league value, potentially, in those moments. I don't know if it might be considered a stretch. It could be, but it's definitely possible. He has immense talent for a young guy. He's definitely someone to put on your watch list I think he's worth an ad right now, a speculative ad in most leagues. With the Blake Griffin injury, even if it's just a streaming temporary type of thing. But when they're healthy, Wood should be the fourth front court rotation member behind Blake, Drummond, and I guess Markieff Morris. And he can also play either front court spot, which should help him out because he's pretty versatile with his ability to hit shots from range too. He's worth a roster spot in deeper leagues and in dynasty leagues, similar to a lot of these other names we were discussing. In these redraft leagues, the shallower ones, I think he's worth rostering now. He's worth that speculative ad, like I said. So, you know, put him on your watch list or give him an ad. That's pretty much what I got for that.
And fair enough.
I think we did have one more name, but we can skip him if you want. It don't matter. To move on.
Yeah, we're gonna skip him. We're gonna skip him. Generally speaking, most of these guys are not.
Yeah.
Super, super relevant, except in the deepest of leagues. Christian Wood, though, worth talking about because, again, he might be giving back value here in the early weeks. So as a streaming option in your redraft leagues or as a DFS play, pretty cheap option there for you.
Yeah, good call.
For Detroit, especially while Blake Griffin's out. And like you said, he's got an interesting skill set, does some things that not actually many other big men in Detroit do, which is shoot well from the line. And pass. So it's going to be, well, Blake Griffin does that, but outside of that, it's interesting to look at. I think Christian Wood, I don't know if I'm necessarily buying him in the right team fit, like I said, for a streaming option. I think it's a great choice in terms of long-term appeal for this season. I just don't think he's there. That's the way that it goes with these guys. It's definitely a speculative ad, as you said. But it could pay off. I just don't know if the Pistons are going to be pushing. I just don't think they're going to be able to give him consistent minutes with what they want out of this season. So that concludes our buy or sell. And here to finish out the segment, we're just quickly going to touch on a few games of the week that we want to highlight. So stay tuned as we touch on that. Welcome back, fantasy fans. Finishing up rounding out our fantastic episode this week. We're going to hit on just a few games that we're interested in from a basketball standpoint, maybe call out. These are games that you, as a basketball fan, will likely be watching. And we're just going to call out what we're looking for, potential fantasy things to keep an eye on, storylines that we find interesting, etc. To start off tonight, late tonight, the West Coast game, we've got Clippers-Lakers, the LA matchup that we've all been waiting for. Extremely exciting. What I'm looking at here is Paul George is out for this first game. What does that mean for the Clippers? What does that mean for the rotation? Who do they go to in their rotation? Rod Magruder's out. Not that anyone cares, but Magruder's out as well. What does this mean for Mo Harkless, right? What does that mean for the types of minutes that he gets? Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, they're going to be missing a lot of games this season, we think. So, I'm definitely going to be interested to see how that works out. Zubac, Harrell, what is that? What are their minutes breakdown going to be? Is Zubac going to be able to take minutes away from Montrezl Harrell? And then on the Lakers side, are they really going to be as top heavy in production as we think they will be? And then who are going to be the backup guys? Who are the guys who are going to get those minutes when AD and LeBron aren't dominating the ball? That's definitely what I'm looking at. Jay, what do you like in the Clippers and Lakers matchup? What are you going to be looking for tonight?
Yeah, you basically nailed it here. I don't have a ton to add. Kawhi and LeBron look like they're both a full go. And I want to see, like you said, I want to see who their third option is. Who else they have there that's going to step up? If it's KCP or Kuzma or whoever. I don't really have much to add here.
I think that a lot of people are going to care about this game. LA, not LA, doesn't matter. I think there's just going to be a lot of intrigue because a lot of people think these two teams are going to be at the top of the West at the end of the year. Going to be interesting to see how differently they play against each other versus how they might play against other teams. So that's just something to keep an eye on. Moving on to another game that we're interested in on Wednesday, we're kind of going to be picking out basically one game a day except for maybe the lighter days. On Wednesday, a game that I'm really interested in, Jazz versus Thunder. What are your thoughts here on this one, Jay? It's an interesting Western Conference matchup. Obviously, the Thunder rebuilding now. The Jazz, of course, the new look Jazz, they're going to be wanting to come out strong. It's not so much about who wins this, but it's more about what we're looking for. What are you looking at in this game, Jay?
Yeah, the Jazz, everyone's favorite dark horse to win the championship this year. I'll be watching to see how Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell gel together. Who's going to have a higher usage? Who's going to have the ball more in the opening situations and in the closing situations if it's a close game, which it might not be. It might be. OKC is going to be better than some people expect while they have Chris Paul and Gallo and Steven Adams and all of them, which they might not towards the end of the season. But another thing is the Thunder's wing rotation will be interesting in a rough kind of way with options like Robertson, Ferguson, Diallo, and also the rookie Darius Bazley, who I kind of like as a deep dynasty stash guy. He's still a ways away, but he has some upside. So I'm interested to see if he gets much playing time this year.
Yeah, definitely interesting. I'm definitely looking at the minutes breakdown between SGA, CP3, and Dennis Schroeder. It's kind of what we talked about earlier. I'm really curious to see how are those minutes going to break down? What is that going to look like? Is SGA really going to be given free rein to sort of make mistakes out there? And then, is Adams, I think a lot of people are very high on Steven Adams coming back without Russ, his value going up. I want to kind of see, is that really going to be the truth? Is that going to be corroborated by fact in these games? And then on the Utah side of the ball, are they really that good? Are they really as good as people think? They are the darlings. Are they actually going to show? Are they going to beat the crap out of this team that they should be beating the crap out of? Like you said, what does Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell look like? I'm really, really intrigued by that. It's going to be an interesting game. Again, not one where it's really who's going to win, but it's more, how are the Jazz going to win, and are the Thunder going to make it interesting? And that's more what I'm looking at. The next game that we want to talk about in the East, the Raptors, who are playing right now, going against the Boston Celtics. Obviously, two of the better teams in the East, two teams that are kind of working in that second tier behind the Bucks and the Sixers. I think Bucks and Sixers, they're the two best teams. And then it's kind of, Raptors, Celtics, Heat, and the Nets, in that second tier. These two teams in the Atlantic Division, they're going to be playing each other a lot. This is their first matchup. What are you looking at here in this matchup, which is sure to be probably pretty testy, I think, between these two teams? I don't think it's going to be a very friendly matchup.
Main thing I want to watch is I can't wait to see just how much the rookies are used in the Celtics rotation. I expect Grant Williams to have a decent role, but the rest of them are questionable. How much playing time does Carson Edwards get, if any? And will Langford be sent back and forth between the G League and the actual squad? They just have a ton of young depth, so I don't know about that. And does Jaylen Brown take that next step and prove he's worth the money? That's something I'll be watching on the Celtics as well. As far as the Raptors go, can Siakam prove that he's their guy? He's their number one option. And can the Raptors can they maintain their competitiveness and stay on close to the top of the East? Those are the storylines to watch here for me.
Yeah. One extra thing that I wanted to toss in here. I'm really curious about the Celtics big men.
That's a good call.
I'm really, really curious about how the Celtics look on defense in the paint. Enes Kanter is just not a good defender in the paint, as we well know. And they don't really have much help for him. Daniel Theis he's okay. But if that's who really you're relying on, they're going to have a rough go. And maybe Robert Williams III comes in and shows, makes a big jump. He potentially could be a big surprise for some people. But I don't know if he's really ready for that just yet. So it might be, from a fantasy standpoint, you know, we might be thinking about, hey, if you're a big man, if you've got a big man and you're playing against the Celtics, start him, because they're not going to be very good in defense. And you're going to want to be taking advantage of that matchup. On the perimeter, I think they're going to be a much, much more difficult team. But at the rim, big guys, your Andre Drummonds, your Hassan Whitesides, your Joel Embiids, they're going to eat against the Celtics. And that's something that you should definitely be keeping an eye on from a fantasy standpoint.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Now, the final game to discuss, and we'll end this very long podcast. And it's another East matchup on Saturday between two of the top teams, but two teams who a lot of question marks about what they're going to be doing. The Heat against the Bucks on Saturday. Two teams battling it out. Two good teams in the East, definitely both looking at top four spots. I mean, I don't know if the Heat are actually going to be there. I think they're more pretenders than anything else, but I'm not really a big Heat fan generally or this season. What I like about this matchup and what I'm interested in is, you know, there's some intrigue around Deion Waiters. Is Tyler Herro going to start? Is he going to be the guy? Is he actually going to be able to maintain the buzz and the attention that he's been getting up to this point? Is it really going to work out that way for him? And then is Jimmy Butler, is he going to be that guy? And then, you know, is he really going to be the main guy? I think he will, but to what extent? I'm curious, how well is he going to play in Spoelstra's system? And then personally for Dragic, I just want to see how much time he gets. I want to see how long he's on the floor. I want to see, you know, is he going to be given opportunities, especially against the Bucks, who are a little thin at point guard? Is he going to be able to press that advantage? Very, very curious about how that works out. Jay, what are you interested in looking at in this matchup?
You know, the Heat have been close to the bottom of my league pass list for a couple of years now, but they've worked their way up a little bit this offseason, not just with the addition of Butler, but Tyler Herro is young and exciting, and full-time Bam Adebayo should be great. The Bucks will really be good, just like last year. I think they'll miss Brogdon more than some people think, but they'll obviously be fine and a top Eastern team, if not the top Eastern team. So that's all I really got for them. One thing I want to mention real quick is that the Pelicans have played 12 men in this game already.
Yikes.
Yeah, yikes. At the 8-minute mark in the second quarter, 12 players have gotten action now. The only player
not a good sign
listed on the box score roster who hasn't gotten a minute is Jackson Hayes right now. So
yeah, and that's going to be the case this season. Because he's just not ready. But yeah, I mean, it's clear that the Pelicans, I mean, they're going to be looking for answers. You know, they're going to be looking for answers anywhere they can get them, because they're going to want to win games, but they're going to want to see their young guys. It's going to be very, very interesting this season to see, you know, how things play out. I think Gentry is going to spend the beginning of the season really feeling things out.
Definitely.
But back to the matchup, some other things, another matchup thing is if the Bucks can really dominate down low, if Giannis is going to really take it in to the Heat and kind of what that means in terms of looking at the Heat matchup, losing Whiteside. Obviously, they still have Bam Adebayo, but is he going to be able to replicate that presence down in the middle? And then to the point that I was making earlier about Dragic, will the Bucks, is that backup point guard situation in Milwaukee as complicated as it looks, you know? Is Eric Bledsoe actually, you know, a good basketball player, right? I mean, we saw him basically crumble in the playoffs. I'm curious to see how he comes out. You know, is he going to be able to respond? And then, you know, is George Hill going to step up and be that guy? I think he's got the pedigree. He's shown that he can do it. Curious to see if he, you know, if they go to him more and more, especially in a game against the Heat, where, you know, it's going to be a contentious game because of the opponent. So a lot to look at, a lot to consider. Jay, any last points here as we close out this very, very special NBA intro, NBA welcome to the NBA podcast. Any last thoughts, Jay?
Yeah, actually, one more matchup I wanted to throw out there. The Magic versus the Cavs tomorrow night is intriguing to
me. Okay.
I've been talking about the Bayline system all off season, so I'll be watching to see how it actually looks on the court with some of the offensive players they have. And that's also a very interesting matchup for them. You know, maybe a tough one because of the length Orlando has. And speaking of Orlando, that front court rotation is something else I'll be keeping an eye on. Obviously, Vooch is the starting center, but I want to see if Mo Bamba really is the backup there and how well will he hold up defensively in his sophomore season.
Indeed.
And then Aaron Gordon and Jonathan Isaac at the forward spots. I know Aaron Gordon isn't the sexy fantasy name he was just a couple of years ago, but I do believe...
I still think he's pretty sexy.
He used to be everybody's guy. He used to be the guy with huge upside.
I saw him. I remember a couple years ago, he was going third round, second round.
Two years ago.
It was that high upside play.
I believe he does still have another level he hasn't unlocked yet. I think he actually has a playmaking aspect to his game that he will hopefully learn to blossom and utilize well. And then going from an unsexy fantasy name to everyone's guy this season, Jonathan Isaac, does Isaac actually take that next step offensively? That might...
Everybody loves Isaac.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So that might be what I'm watching closest here. And then on top of that, obviously, Markelle Fultz is a big topic here. I just hope he can stay on the court. That's all I'm hoping for. So the Magic have several storylines for me that I'll be watching this season.
Are they a league pass team?
I think they might be.
Yeah. Well, fans, thank you so much for sticking with us to the end here. Another classic edition of the Fantasy Unicorns podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I've been Tony Papadopoulos at @whose_your_papa on the Twitter. Hit us up. I love talking basketball all day long, as much as I can. Jay, sign off. Say goodbye. Let the people know where they can find you.
Yep. Find me on Twitter @FantasyNBALayup. And I hope everybody has a great first week of NBA action. We are officially back, ladies and gentlemen.
Happy NBA season, everybody. Thank you very much for spending this very special and momentous occasion with us. We really appreciate it. I'm kissing you with my eyes right now. And my heart. Everybody who's listening. Thank you. And have a great day.